to you by the Jonas Podcasting Network, found exclusively at WrestlingWithJonas.com. And welcome to the latest episode of Wrestling with Jonas, episode 333. And of course, November marks 5 years of Wrestling with Jonas. Like I say, a huge month of podcasts, of interviews during the month of November, which I will get to very, very soon. But episode 333, I couldn't think of a better guest than the man with a black heart of gold, Nico Angelo. How you doing, my friend?
What's happening? Doing all good, mate, to be honest. Yeah, doing good.
There we go. This is a bit of a bucket list interview for me, I've got to be honest. I did ask you a couple of times, like, no, don't do interviews, don't do podcasts. Did them a while back, but I finally managed to get you on the Wrestling with Jonas podcast, and it's a bit of a bucket list dream interview for me, but thank you so much for agreeing to be a part of this.
No, thank you, mate. It's I think you're my one of the year, this one. I think this is the first time I've done one in about a year, so...
There we go. And of course, we are live. We're live across Facebook Live, YouTube, Twitch, and now Twitter, or X, whatever we call it nowadays. So if you want to get in touch with the show, you can do. Just ping us your questions through using your chosen device. So we'll do our very best to answer every single one over the next hour, hour and 15, however long we go. But it's going to be an awesome conversation with Nico Angelo. And we've had a lot of questions come through already. But just a quick reminder, as I said, November is... 5 years of Wrestling with Jonas, and it started with renowned referee Tom Scarborough coming onto the show at the very, very start of the month in November. My next live interview with that after that was Session Moth Martina. Brought the fun, she brought the bants, and an absolutely wonderful live conversation with Martina. I think we went about an hour and a half, really, truly wonderful conversation. Last week, we had Leon Cage, Friday, as a matter of fact. Certainly the youngest, the most experienced member of the November lineup, but a fantastic conversation. This guy's got a very, very bright future. Go and check that one out if you want to learn all about what Leon Cage is all about. And of course, last week, part one of episode 7 of my Legends Masterclass series went live with British wrestling legend, world of sport legend, Johnny Saint, of course, and part 2 will be dropping soon. But part one, I was absolutely blown away and privileged to be in the company in the living room of Johnny Saint when we recorded that one. So go and check that one out. That one's now available on YouTube and all audio platforms. Later on this week, we've got one more live interview. Kira Chimera is coming onto the show. A wonderful talent from France doing some wonderful things across Europe and the UK, picking up gold left, right and centre. Can't wait to speak to Kira Chimera. And next week, I've got the Queen of Mean, Lana Austin, coming onto the show. What a wonderfully stacked lineup. And I think I'm even going to squeeze in an interview with Dirty Dango while he's over on these shores next week. But today, it's all about this man here, Nico Angelo. One of my favourite pictures of yours, the black and white shot there. Really, really cool artwork, really cool picture. But first of all, we've got to talk about 2023. And, you know, I've seen a lot of your action. I've seen a lot of your matches for various promotions. But I think it's probably going to end up being one of your busiest years on the scene. And probably one of your most enjoyable years as well. But sum up 2023 for us so far, then, Nico.
Bit of a roller coaster, really, because it's been a good year. Top to bottom, honestly, I feel like it's been a great year. More so the second half. But I felt like the year was going to go a bit better for me in terms of a few more appearances here, a few more appearances there, but it hasn't happened. So what I've been doing is kind of focusing on myself a lot more to try and make these things happen. And already January 2024 is looking very good for myself. So all that effort I'm putting in is seeming to come through. So
yeah. And that's really cool. And like I said, I'm pleased with it. Sometimes you just need to switch things up a little bit, don't you? And kind of, you know, do things a little bit differently sometimes. I think the old saying is if you carry on doing the things you've always done, you're always going to get the same results or something like that. But yeah, occasionally you need to switch things up, and I'm glad that it's turning a corner for you. But in my opinion, I think the opinion of your fans and the promoters that have used you, you've had an awesome year. I don't think you've put in anything other than a stellar match, to be honest with you. We will talk about many of those. But let's talk a bit about, before we talk about Nico Angelo, the wrestler, let's talk about Nico Angelo, the coach, because I know that you're very much part of the coaching setup at New Wave Academy, New Wave Wrestling, in Newport, South Wales. Did you have any coaching or training background in wrestling before Bronco gave you the call up?
No. Honestly, nothing. It was just training, just wrestling, just working around the scene, being around the right people, learning from top guys at the time.
Been for you then, going from, like, say, pro wrestler, you know, working with all the top talent, and then being asked to coach? I'm sure you adapted to it very well and very quickly, but how was that transition for you?
I turned it down first.
Really?
Like, yeah, I turned it down a couple of times, because I was just like, you know what, although I felt like I hadn't been doing this long enough to be doing something like that. And then, you know, opinions changed for myself upon time doing something doesn't equal how good you get at something or how much experience you have. It just doesn't. So my brain changed quickly on that. So I got offered to do it like straight away when New Wave opened, and I was just like, I'm not too sure. And then Brendan asked me again, and then Wild Boar asked me, and I was like, shit, if Boar's asking me, and he's trained, like, I mean, everybody just come out of Wales, basically.
Yeah.
Then I was just like, all right, it's time to...
There we go. And the rest is history. And of course, you've got Brendan, Danny Jones, Danny Luna, Wild Boar, and yourself. An awesome lineup of coaches. You probably can't pick, or you couldn't handpick, a better lineup of coaches for anyone training academy. They've got them all under one roof at New Wave. Do you play a specific role there within the coaching setup?
I feel like we all have different aspects that we bring to training, everybody that's coming through. We've also got... Mark Andrews has also now recently joined the coaching team as well, like he had done when it was Dragon Pro. And we also have Chuck Mambo doing appearances every now and again as well. So we've got those two guys joining in as well. What was your question there? Go on.
Yeah, but did you play a particular role within the setup? Do you look after a particular set of students, or what's your day-to-day in New Wave?
All right, so I help train the teens, and then as well, like, we all kind of bring different things to the table. For example, like Brendan and Hitch bring very much, Brendan and Wildboar bring very much like aggression and that type of style of training. Danny Jones brings more of a technical aspect. Myself and Mark Andrews bring more of like a high flying aspect. And I find from the trainees telling me, I've got a good way of describing mechanics of things and how to move on with things like that. So I'll always find that people struggle to do things, and then I can break it down in a certain way, and it just clicks. So I find that I've got a knack for that. So that's quite good. So I kind of find that is more... Cruiserweight high flying and mechanics is kind of what I go by.
Yeah. And I had Brendan on the show maybe 5 or 6 months ago now. Really top guy, very funny, tons of experience, one of the best pros in the UK for sure. And I've had a good handful of New Wave recruits and trainees on the show, from Aluna, James Ellis, Shane Hooker, Harrison Bennett, Leon Cage last Friday, of course. I'm so impressed with the setup you've got down in Newport at New Wave, and you appear to be creating some really, really exciting stars for the future there.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys that have come through since New Wave have been there that have just basically come out of nowhere and really listened, adapted, and gone for it. There's been no fear of, what if, I don't know if this is just the way that we've started to coach people as a group, but I feel like nobody's got any fear of putting stuff out there into the world and what anybody's going to think of them. They're kind of just going for it. And I really, really fucking love that, man.
Yeah, 100%. I think they've had 12 shows since they started running shows after the school was first open. I think Brendan was a bit hesitant about running shows, but then he was creating all this talent just to have to have a bit of a platform for them. And you're 12 shows in now. I think you've been on all 12 shows, if I'm not mistaken. But typically, and Brendan explained this perfectly during our interview, you know, he would generally pair up the newer talent with somebody more experienced, to help that newer talents improve. And that's kind of the best way, of course. But those shows in particular, they've been a great success so far, haven't they?
Oh, they've been fantastic. I think out of the 12, I think there's been 11 sellouts. So for a company to just appear in a new location in a new part of the country to just be selling out like that is fantastic. And it's a really nice, small, like, what's the word I'm looking for here? Small and
intimate.
Thank you. Intimate venue. That's right. It's lovely. So, I've been on, I think, 10 of the 12. I think I've had 2 dates somewhere else, but I've been there for as many as I possibly can.
Yeah. And one of the names that I mentioned a moment ago, one of my former guests at the very beginning of 2023, the brilliance, James Ellis. You've had your encounters with Mr. Ellis in a New Wave ring once or twice, haven't you? Am I right in thinking that? You had a couple of matches with him?
I had a couple of matches, a couple of experiences with the Brill.
But he's had a real breakout year, and I think 2023 has been a great year. 2024 is going to be an even more of a stellar year for him. And that's, I know that he had a couple of years practice or training under his belt before joining New Wave, but he really seems to have exploded on the scene in 2023, hasn't he?
Yeah, he came to New Wave and he came knowing that he needed to learn to step up to get to the next point to then start to break out more. And anything that we told him, he wouldn't really argue with or not do. That makes sense. So like, if you said to him, look, you need to be cut doing this, start doing this for wherever it was, he would just go for it, man. And he was going to as many promotions as he can. He still is. And his mentality, as soon as he arrived, was just fantastic. And he's a neat boy, like me. So both grew up quite close to each other and didn't even know. So
there we go. But if you haven't heard of James Ellis, I'm surprised because he's very loud. But if you haven't heard of him, you're going to hear about him and see him on the scene absolutely everywhere. I know that he is kind of spreading throughout the UK, not just the South West or South Wales. But we did have a question that came through from friend of the show and a fan of yours, Richie. When are we going to see a Nico Angelo versus Leon Cage rivalry in New Wave? Now, of course, Leon Cage was my most recent live guest last Friday. Really, really top talent. Still only 16, which is absolutely sickening to be that talented and that young. But he actually told me during my interview that one of his dream matches will be to go against yourself, and you two have not had that match yet. Rich is asking, when are we going to get that rivalry?
When are we going to get that? Leon's incredible, especially for his age. And funny enough, he keeps asking me as well. he's not somebody who's lack of confidence or shy at all. So he's very much like, tells you what he wants. When are we going to get that? That's a good question, because I've wrestled Shane and I've wrestled a couple of new up and guys. I've wrestled James Ellis. So that should be coming at some point. That will definitely be a thing. And hopefully not just the one. Hopefully it'll be multiple.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Let's get on to recent events and let's talk about this. And there you are. Oh, and I'm just going to get rid of Richie's question. Thank you, Richie. As the All Wales champion, being defended on occasions in Pro Wrestling Chaos, which is where you won it a couple of months back against Danny Luna. I mean, that bout has a history, a lineage through Dragon Gate Pro, and synonymous with people like Mike Hitchman, Wild Boar, and individuals like that. But you were there during the Dragon Pro days, weren't you, when it was being defended through 2018 and 2019. Was that a championship that you always had your eye on?
It was the first one, because Dragon Pro really was my first place where independent wrestling and a certain form of wrestling was kind of open to me. So Dragon Pro really was the place, or that belt to me was, okay, if I can get my hands on this, then I know that I'm starting to get to where I want to get to. It was very much the first prize in wrestling I wanted to try and achieve. And I thought it was gone. I thought that the chance of being able to get that was just gone when everything went away. So it was amazing, really, when it just came back around. Because everybody always says in wrestling, you know, everything comes back around. Don't worry about it now. It'll come back around. And most of the time you're like, okay, maybe I'll believe it. But this one I just didn't think was going to come back around, man. But here we are.
And it did. And I think it was September, Danny Luna at a Pro Wrestling Chaos show. And you finally got it. You won it. It's a beautiful championship, first of all. Really, really beautiful belt. I'd say a lot of prestige behind it. What did it mean to you as a competitor, as a performer, to become the All Wales champion? And like I say, it does carry a lot of prestige behind it, and you are now its holder. What did it mean to you when you got that three count?
All of the best Welsh wrestlers have held this belt, like all of the best ones. So it was just a case of, oh, okay, I'm up there now, because it's only been passed forward to, I guess, just said it, but pass forward to the best. And that was a real big, okay, I know what people are seeing me as now. This is what I've been feeling in myself for a while, and now more and more people are seeing it. So it was quite a big moment for me personally. Like I said, it was the first belt that I wanted to really go for. And after the year that Brendan had with that belt, bringing it up to the next level and really showing off, you know, what a Welsh wrestler really can do, especially with the year that he had. And then Danny Luna taking it. And then with the year that she's had, taking it off of her, is the ball's rolling now with Brendan, with Danny, and now we're going to see where this goes.
So where are we with that then? Is there a storyline regarding or revolving around yourself and the championship? Where do we kind of, do you have a natural opponent lined up, or are you looking over your shoulder to people? You've obviously got a target on your back now. What's next for Nico Angelo and the All Wales title?
Whoever wants to step up can step up, honestly. I know that one of the announcers has recently got into wrestling and Pro Wrestling Chaos, and he's called me out. So we'll see where that's going. I'm not worried, but we'll see what he's got to offer. So
yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a bit about Southwest Wrestling, because that's certainly where I've seen you the most this year. A few times, most recently the Frog and Fiddle, which is a very, very interesting, very intimate, sometimes rowdy over 18 audience. And you were there, I think, earlier this month or last month against Charles Crowley. Now, I mean, Crowley's had kind of a year or two, you know, to be proud of. He's kind of gone absolutely everywhere, traveling internationally now and wrestling for Progress and all the big promotions. But it was a first time encounter between yourself and Crowley, wasn't it, in the Frog and Fiddle? How was that experience?
It was indeed first time, and to be honest, I've been waiting to wrestle Crowley for a long time, and I know he was saying that he's been waiting to wrestle me for a long time as well. We've kind of sort of been around each other for a while, but at the same time, not. Like, every now and again, I've popped into his little bubble, and every now and again, he's popped into mine. So it's been it was good. It was just a shame that we were both not 100% when we got to wrestle.
Mm.
I had recently had a neck injury, and he'd recently had a shoulder, I believe. So it was not 100% encounter, but it was very fun, and I had a cool time. And he's a good wrestler.
He really is. Yeah, like I say, the progression that guy has had over the last couple of years has been pretty mind blowing, to be honest with you. And I've seen you a few other times again at the Frog and Fiddle against Chris Bronson, and I think back in. It was maybe May, the Trinity Centre in Bristol, when you had that three-way for the Openweight Championship against Sid and against Tate. But you've had an interesting journey with Southwest Wrestling, haven't you? I think a lot of it is involved Septic Sid Oakley. A fair portion of it is involved the Openweight title. Give us a little bit of an insight into your journey with Southwest Wrestling, and it's been an enjoyable experience. Well, it certainly appears to have been an enjoyable one for you.
Yeah, I'll just go from the beginning, I think, see how much I can remember.
Absolutely. I'm going to bring up this picture as well.
After lockdown, after everything happened, I think I worked for around 16 different promotions, 17 different promotions in 2019. But then when I came back, I think there was only two left. Of those promotions, there was literally only two, and one of them was Southwest. And during this time off, I'd managed to put on like 20 kilos, change things up, and I went to Pete, spoke to Pete. He got me on a couple of shows, and it was just from there. I always didn't take for granted as soon as I came back. Whatever wrestling show it was meant a platform for me. So him using me, it was just all out, no matter what, every single show, a platform to show myself. And ended up wrestling, I think it was at some points, it was like three times a month for Southwest. So it was, I had a fantastic time there, and respect Pete. Guys that worked there, to be honest, I've had a great time.
Yeah, 100%. And tell us a little bit about your feud with Septic Sid, because when I had Sid on the show a few months back, he specifically remembers the last man standing match that you two had at the end of 2021. And of course, I mentioned it earlier, I alluded to the street fight that you had at the Trinity Centre between Sid and Tate Mayfairs over the Openweight Championship, which kind of capped off that. Well, I think he described it as maybe a two-year feud between the two of you. And I know that you was away for a little bit, 2022, where Sid stole the championship off of Tate or whoever was the champion, and that kind of carried on into 2023. But I think he classed you as probably his favourite and most fierce opponent that he's ever had.
Well, I'm glad to hear that from him, because we've had a couple of hard ones, me and him, so he's definitely up there for me. I've wrestled a lot of different types of wrestlers, and he's a very unique wrestler. I don't think I've ever wrestled anybody quite like him.
For sure.
Very interesting one, where the title was bouncing back and forth, people stealing it here, stealing it there, taking this, running away with it. It was a bit chaotic at times, because I had to figure out really and plan and kind of know what was going on. But the one that stick in my brain more than anything is that first last man standing match in the Frog and Fiddle. Because, thumbtacks suck. They suck.
Yes. I don't know how you guys go through it with thumbtacks. I think I knelt on one Christmas, and it went into my knee. And I, was not very pleasant. It took me hours to recover. But you guys taking thumbtacks to the back and to the arms, and then just carrying on with the match as if nothing had ever happened. All credit to you.
It's when you get them in the hands, that's miserable. But the rest of the body, it sucks, but the hands specifically, and in your feet. So if you're wearing like amateur wrestling boots instead of like, the big British style wrestling boots, you the thumbtacks actually go through. So when you walk in, they the boots do nothing, and it stabs you in the feet. So that's miserable.
Well, I had Tom Dawkins, Car on the Wire, on the show earlier on in the year, and we spoke about his match against Spike Treve from Super Strong Style 2022, when they had the trampoline spot and the going through the table and the thumbtacks. And he said that he ran towards the trampoline and his last step was onto a thumbtack. And of course, he wears no boots. He said that was the most painful experience during that match, at least, anyway. But thumbtacks, no thanks.
Saw him wrestling Chris Brooks at the tram shed in Cardiff. And that was another one. That was sleeper hold getting cut off by being slammed into the thumbtacks, and then a lot of horrible stuff in that one.
For sure. I mentioned to you, I think, before we went live, that I'm going to talk to you about two of my favorite matches, one in particular. But the first one I'm going to talk about is, I think it was from March, and it was No Mercy Sweep the Leg from the Caerphilly Leisure Centre. You had a match at the time. It was for your TNT Ultra X Championship against Shane Hooker. Now, I don't know what you remember about that match, but easily stole the show. It was a tremendous match. Of course, Shane, another hot prospect coming out of the South Wales scene. He's injured at the moment, hoping for a big return in 2024. But what do you remember about that match? Because the two of you, you know, high-flying, aerialistic daredevils, I think your style was mixed, but it was a hard hitting and kind of on the edge of your seat match, certainly for the fans. What do you remember about it?
I remember throwing him over the merch table, and
that did happen.
And I remember him with a split personality, but Shane is he's very talented, and he's come up out of nowhere as well. He's not somebody that had a lot of experience in wrestling before he came to New Wave. Little bits here and there. And I think at the time then, he'd only been training for a year, like including being on shows and training. It's only been a year. So allowing him to wrestle for the Ultra X belt at that point was a... Here's what it's going to be like. I'm going to give you the shot to prove yourself. And he did, and he stepped up. And it was a fantastic match. I had a great time. And he really just showed that he was ready to evolve into what type of wrestler he needed to be.
Yeah.
And then after that, like, there was a couple of matches after that. I think he had one with, he had a fantastic match with Danny Jones as well. And then he's had a couple with Connor Mills. And I feel like these types of matches that we were having has really leveled him up now to where he realizes, okay, this is what I need to do. And that match in particular, I think I'll remember that one because I saw Shane as a version of me when I popped up in 2018, because I was a lot smaller and I was a very reckless high flyer. So watching my style change to myself and now going to wrestle him, I tried to look after him in training and in wrestling for that match as much as possible. So it was a pleasure wrestling him, man.
Yeah. And don't want to embarrass you at all, but I think you were involved in my favourite match of the year and a match that will live with me for a long, long time for how special it was and the emotion and the action and everything. And it was your match at United Wrestling a few months back against Aluna Blue, and main event. And I think I probably told you at a show when I saw you recently at Southwest Wrestling that it just blew my mind. And I felt that... Not just because of yourself and your expertise within the ring, but I felt that Aluna really brought the fire, the fights, the passion, the aggression. And I think that you got that extra bit of fire and aggression and passion out of her. Like I say, you executed all of your top moves. She came back and, it's like she just pulled the win out of her soul. But honestly, for that match and what the two of you gave us on that day, a very special match.
Oh, thank you, man. That's I get gobsmacked when people say like their favorite matches of the year of some of my matches. So, you know, thank you very much. And Aluna, again, she is somebody who came to New Wave and was just very much like, what have I got to do to get better? What have I got to do to get where I want to get? And Brendan was the one who said, you know, come train, listen to us, go to as many places as you can, get as much work as you can, change this, that, and the other. And then off she went, and she's done fantastically, to be honest. She's been great. And I can remember when, I think she messaged me, and she said, United Wrestling, I've got a championship there, and I want to wrestle you. I was like, okay. Promoter messaged me, set it all in stone. And I said to her, I was like, all right, this is main event. This is, if you want to, like I was saying to Shane, I was like, if you want to know now what it is to be a main event wrestler in the UK, I'm going to give you a little bit of a taste, and we're going to do what that takes. And I was like, you either sink or swim here. So there was no pulling anything. There was no anything. And she brought it far more than I expected. I expected her to bring it, but I had such a good time in that match. And her getting the win wasn't the best leg, but I was proud of her for that one. Really was. She did fantastic.
And I first met Luna when she was probably only 5 or 6 matches in, and to see her there compared to where she is now, when she's traveling, working all over the country, various promotions, and just absolutely killing it. And like I say, I just think she's the perfect baby face, but in New Wave, she just turned heel, which I can't quite get my head around, to be honest with you. But Shane Hooker and Luna, to watch.
We were at Attack, and this was like 2018, I think. And the first time I met her, she was a fan in the crowd. And fast forward it years later, and I'm in the back of a car going to one of the shows with her. And then she was talking about watching the shows at Attack, and it was only there where it clicked. And I was like, oh my God, you're that person that I was speaking to in the crowd. And she was like, you've only just realized. I was like, yeah. So it was a nice turnaround moment, because I found out I was still very new at that point as well, when I was doing those early Attack shows. And yeah. She was lovely to me then, and she proper was supportive. So it only felt natural to pay that forward as soon as it came across.
100%. 100%. We had a question that came through before we went live, Nico, and I'm going to bring it up now. Is it going to work? Here we go. Richie, friend of the show, his three favourite matches of the year so far is your match with Rein Leverkusen, then Kid Lykos 2 at Winter Slam, and then versus Eddie Dennis. He said that was an awesome, like, 33-minute match that the two of you had. What are some of your favourite matches or moments of the year so far?
Some of my favourite matches.
Richie's really putting you on the spot here. Cheers, Richie.
I always enjoy wrestling Darice. We always have a good time. So any of those matches. I had a really fun one with LJ Cleary at UPW. Really enjoyed wrestling Eddie. Like Us Boys. Think though, I think my favorite match of the year has to be the second night of Attack in Prism against Wild Boar in the final of the Attack title tournament. I think that's to be my favorite one.
That one there.
That's the boy.
There we go. There we go.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk a bit more about Wild Boar a bit later, because I think we had a question came up about yourself and Wild Boar. Great list there. And thank you very much, Richie. Let's take it all the way back. When did wrestling first come into your life as a fan, and what sort of impact did it have? Kind of who really jumped out the TV screen at you, and kind of what really turned you on to wrestling?
So I used to watch wrestling at my grandmother's house after I played rugby on Sundays. And there was, I think at the time, my wrestling WWE knowledge is not great, but it might have been Velocity, it might have been Heat, it might have been one of those boys. But I can specifically remember the first time I was watching wrestling was Crash Holly popping up.
Nice.
So he was one of the first people I was like, oh, this is an interesting thing. I was like, so I started watching that. And then it very quickly evolved into Eddie Guerrero's and Rey Mysterio's. I think those were my two favorites more than anything growing up.
When you mention Eddie and Rey, was it those two or that particular style that influenced you once you started to find your feet in a wrestling ring?
So my style originally, I had no idea what kind of style I wanted to do when I first got into wrestling. I was like, oh, I was a powerlifter, so like maybe I'm going to be doing some strong types of wrestling, you know, lifting and throwing and this, that, and the other. And it became very apparent that mass moves mass. Doesn't matter how strong you are. So being that type of wrestler wasn't really a specific avenue. So I started to watch more and more and getting more introduced into independent wrestling. And the style that really got me hooked on early was just watching independent wrestling matches of Pac before he got to WWE.
Yeah.
Before he got NXT and everything. And I just couldn't believe what I was watching. And I was like, this is it. I was like, this is what I want to do. And that kind of changed then, because I realized, although some of the feats that he did, I could do some of them, not all of them. My body couldn't take it. I just didn't have, I was getting injured too much. So I've changed my style over the past couple of years, and people that I've tried to like emulate now has been a bit more, if you watched any type of pack from when he was King of the Cruiserweights.
Yeah.
More that style of him. Austin Aries, Roderick Strong, people like that, and been picking bits from here and there.
So a little bit slower, a little bit more measured, and hitting the big moves when they really matter.
Yes, sir.
That's right. That's all that counts. That's all that counts. Tell me a bit about, were you a sporty child? Did you have a sporting background? You mentioned weightlifting there, which you did kind of before you really got into pro wrestling. But was you just a gym boy, or were there other sports?
Very sporty as a kid. I got thrown into everything. I did. When I was really young, I did a bit of kickboxing. Then I did a little bit of boxing. Then it was rugby and football. Then predominantly rugby. And then from like rugby was from when I was 6 till about 17. Wow. And sometimes I was growing up as a kid, I was playing for like 4 different teams. So I had like school, club, county, and then like a schoolboy situation as well. So I had like 4 different teams that I had to play for. So I was like training 4 times a week, playing rugby 3 times a week, sometimes 4 as a kid. So I had to thank my grandfather there, because he'd do a full day of work from like 6 till 6, being a lawyer, and then he'd come and grab me and do this every day of the week.
Wow.
He's a machine.
Yeah.
So
that's really cool. What was that kind of light bulb moment for you, that transition from being wrestling fan to say, right, okay, I want to try and find a school? And how did that happen? What tell us about that inspirational moment that made you decide that you want to follow your dream in professional wrestling?
So this wasn't through anything good, really, sadly. I'd like it to be a nice thing, but this one kind of wasn't. It was I'd been medically discharged from the Royal Navy. I was a powerlifter for a few years. I ended up getting a very serious back injury that I didn't know was that serious at the time. And I can remember I'd gone back to live with my mum because everything had gone wrong, and I was like, I needed a place to stay. And I was on the computer just looking around my room. I got nothing really to my name, little bits and bobs here. And I was like, what do I want to do? I was like, I'm stuck now. Like, my career options were, for me, Royal Navy. And if that doesn't work, I'm in trouble. So then I was like, okay, we'll do powerlifting. Well, that didn't work. So I was like, I really wanted to do something like with more sport. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, what do I enjoy? I'm still watching wrestling every week, every day, every month, all of pay-per-views. I'm staying up till 4 a.m. with my mates watching it still. And I was like, I can do this. I was like, I'm sure I can. So I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell my mother. I didn't tell my girlfriend at the time. There was only one person I told, and that was a friend who lived in London, because I needed a place to stay. And I sold half of my shit, and I went to go live in a warehouse in London for about four to five months, I think. I crashed with him for about two, and then the other like two or three, I was just living in a warehouse, just like in the middle of Croydon, trying to learn how to wrestle.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
That's cold. Crazy.
Really cold.
Yeah, I bet. I work in a warehouse. I know how cold they are. Let alone living in one. My God, take my hat off to you. But strangely, when I was doing my research, I noticed that certainly when your career really kick-started in 2018, your first few months, you were wrestling over in Portugal. What was that all about?
So again, my trip in wrestling, like the first couple of years, like say the first year and a half was a bit strange because I didn't know where I was going, what I was doing, who I was trying to train with or anything. I didn't know the independent scene. I didn't know it existed. I just knew about WWE. That was it. So when I saw this advert for, it was like an Impact training school in London. It was like Al Snow's Academy is what it was. But those two things, I was like, okay, what's Impact? So I looked that up and I was like, oh, okay, I kind of know what's going on now. It's another televised wrestling show. So I followed that, went to go train there. And one of the trainers that was there was a wrestler called Red Eagle. And he was very nice to me. And he was teaching me things that weren't on the curriculum because he was like, no, yeah, try this, do that on the sly, like when nobody was looking. And I was like, well, he just wants me to get better. He just wants me, he thinks that I can progress quicker. So he was just giving me these things. And when that school disappeared, I kind of had nowhere to go. And he said, come and train with me. He was like, you know how the gym works. You train me in the gym. You can stay at my house. I'll train you for wrestling. Like, okay. So I'd go out there I'd try and go out at least once a month for a different amount of time. So I'd be out there for like a week or 2 weeks. At one point, I was out there for like a month straight. And I was just trying to get as much training as possible because that to me was like, okay, this is the only place I could train. And as I talked to him for longer and longer, told me about more places and this, that, and the other. And then eventually, talked about Dragon Pro, and I was like, hang on, there's a place in Wales. So I'd eventually moved on from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I say, still in 2018, you went from Lisbon, Portugal to South Wales, where you had a training school in your backyard, and you didn't realise, but with Mark Andrews and Wild Boar, Dragon Pro. So not only, you know, having the luxury of having a training school in your backyard, South Wales, but with two of the finest pro wrestlers in the UK to kind of take you under their wing. So did you know Mark and Mike before you started training with them?
So I knew Mark purely because I'd been at the Al Snow's place and I'd the Impact. So when I went to Dragon Pro, I think it was my first session. I'm pretty sure it was. So either my first or my second. And Mark was there, and it was like the last session before Christmas, before the school was about to shut down for Christmas. So I think it must have been December 2017. This, and he popped up, and I was like, I'm sure I know this guy. So I got a little picture with him, and he taught me how to moonsault on my first lesson, standing one. And I'd never done any backflips or anything like that before, so that was interesting to figure out that I could, suddenly I can do these things. And it's, yeah, Wild Boar, I had no idea. I didn't know who anybody else was. Didn't have a clue. I was just like, I know this guy's face, but I haven't got a clue where anybody else is, so I need to sit down, shut up, and listen for as long as I can until I figure out what's going on.
So, we spoke about the students at New Wave. And of course, you know, you're still being fairly green, fairly new to the business in 2018, just starting to train under the Dragon Pro banner. How receptive were you to the training? How quickly did you pick things up?
I thought I picked things up pretty quickly when it came to the athletic side of things. I've always been athletic. You know, I wrestled at like the top levels that I could in, sorry, I did sports at the top levels that I could. So rugby, the top levels I could in my area, powerlifting, I got, before my back went, I was second in Europe in my weight class. So this kind of thing, it started to come natural to me. So that I didn't find too hard. So I kind of clicked to it quite quickly in that aspect. The other things which I kind of found difficult were everybody's different opinions on wrestling and how you have to not have one standard view of how to be a wrestler or how to grow as a wrestler. Because if you do, you'll just stagnate so quickly. And yeah, me trying to have so many people tell me different things, and I'm a very black and white person, right? So if I get told one thing, I'm like, oh, okay. And then I get told another one, and I'm like, well, somebody's told me this. And then another person tells me something different, and I'm like, oh, okay, my brain can't be this way with wrestling. It just can't be. So I have to change from a very black and white type of person to, oh, okay, I have to have all these different types of views, and every type of wrestling is okay as long as you are making a crowd enjoy. So that was the hard part for me.
Yeah, I think that's the struggle for a lot of young pros, just trying to get their head around what's expected of them and how they should be, and that kind of changes until, I don't know, several years in, I suppose. But skipping ahead a little bit, because 2018, you did start to find your feet, branching out a little bit, wrestling a fair bit for Dragon Pro and for Attack. But 2019 really appeared to be a breakout year for you, and wrestling a lot more frequently. Attack certainly jumps out at me for the standard and the quality and the name value of opponent that you wrestled in Attack in 2019. I've got a bit of a list here. I remember some of these, you know, 4 or 5 years younger than they are now, but Carl Fletcher, Mark Davis, Cara Noir inside of an Attack ring, Shigehiro Irie, Chris Brooks, A-Kid, Mike Bailey, Robbie X, Mark Haskins, and so many more. Getting the opportunity to face some of those, and like I say, some of their names were already big names at the time. You know, in your first full year, 2019, as I described it, a bit of a breakout year for you. Pretty mind-blowing in a few senses there.
Yeah, some of those matches people still bring up to me. I'll get a random tweet every now and again from somebody saying, you know, oh, I remember you from this match. I still hold this match as one of my favorites, or loads of things along those lines. That was a hard year. I can remember I was underweight. I was trying to pick this up. I was being put in there with these guys who've been doing it for, some of them at that time had been doing it for 12 years already, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And had already traveled the world and done PWG, done this, that, and the other, done WWE, you know, there was a lot in there. It was a wild experience and made me learn very, very quickly. I wouldn't be the wrestler that I am now if I didn't have that experience early on. Because it made me very aware of what I can and can't do, and learned a lot. It was very much, a lot of them were shut up and listen, and learned a lot.
Yeah, and you clearly impressed, and you clearly learned a lot, because before the end of the year, you was there Attack 24/7 champion, weren't you? And I think you won that on day one of their Under the Mistletoe show. And I think you defended it on day two, day three, and day four. And then some matches in 2020 before it all shut down. Connor Mills and Chuck Mambo jumped to mind. But some fond memories of being the 24/7 champion. And I'm not sure. Have you even lost the championship yet? I don't know.
So when everything came back, all the titles got reset, I'm pretty right. sure. So it was a case of, hang on, is this still going on? But no, that's not the case, sadly. But no, that 24/7 win kind of shocked me as well, because I wasn't aware that it was going to be a thing until, it wasn't even the day. I think at the time, that's what happened. I can remember now. So everybody was telling me on that day, make sure your pins are legit. I've been watching you lately. Your pins aren't good enough. You know, you really need to pin legit. I've seen one of your matches where you sat up before you pinned. You know, make sure you pin legit. And I was like, all right. And then another person would come up to me and tell me, make sure your pins are legit. And I was like, why hasn't anybody told me this before? You know, I was having a bit of a newbie meltdown. I was like, what's going on? And it was about 5 minutes before the match, and one of the refs comes up to me and he was like, look, I can't risk this. You're winning. And I was like, what? So what they were planning on doing was just having him stay down, take the pin, and then me having the shock of, oh, shit, I didn't know this was happening. But they were... It got to the last second. They were like, no, we can't risk it. We can't risk it. We want the show to go as clean as it can go. But that match went so good. It was one of those matches that everything went right. And all of the moments hit. And then I had all of my coaches and the attack guys come out at the end of the show. And I didn't know that was going to happen at the end of the match. And they came out and rushed me on stage and rushed me in the ring, lifting me up on their shoulders type of thing. So it was all very a nice moment across the board. And then defending it over the next couple of days, I was so beat up, mate. Like, I can remember going into the last day against Devlin, and we got a lockup, and I limped into the lockup. Literally limped. I couldn't get into the ring properly. Limped into the lockup, but I was so beat up, bro. So
not surprised. Not surprised.
Connor Mills that weekend as well. Connor Mills. He had a similar shift to me, where it was like four main event types of singles in 5 days, and two of his were hardcore matches as well. So he was bust up. I remember speaking to him like a month later, and he was saying, "I still haven't recovered from those from that." It was wild.
Amazing. And of course, we saw the return of Attack earlier this year, haven't we? And I think you've been a part of most, if not all, their shows since they came back. You mentioned about the WrestleMania shows or the WrestleMania weekend shows when you faced Wild Boar in that final on day two. But after your kind of history with Attack back in 2018, 2019, going into 2020, what were your feelings when Attack finally returned and you were, appearing in the purple ring again, you know, under an Attack banner? Was that pretty cool for you?
I was over the moon, to be honest, because I think I did a post saying, you know, I thought this reality was long gone type of thing. You know what I mean? I didn't think this was this option was still available. I thought Attack's done, it's gone, like that, and that's it. So when it came back, I was over the moon, because although Dragon Pro was the first place that I was wrestling properly and the first belt that I wanted, Attack was the first promotion that I was like, I'm going to work for them. You know, because I was already like, I'm in the training school with Dragon Pro. I believe that I'm going to be on their shows, but Attack was the first. I'm going to work for that promotion. And people like Chris Brooks giving me opportunities at Attack. And I can remember being in the ring with Kyle Fletcher, like, and him whispering me, he was like, this is your place. This is your home now. As soon as I wrestled him, he was like, this is your home. You're going to be the man here. And when it came back, man, I was just so happy. Honestly, it was the place in Wales and Bristol to wrestle. So it was very much like, okay, the ball's rolling again now.
Yeah, I think the fans of Attack from the good old days were elated as well. And Attack was, I think, the first proper indie show that I went to back in 2014. An incredible show. I'd say I haven't been down to their new shows yet, but I definitely want to. A quick question that came through before we went live from Richie again. He's been busy, boy, sending all these questions through. Nico, I don't believe that your story with Wild Boar is finished in Attack. What are your thoughts? So fill us in a bit there, because you mentioned that match you had with him over WrestleMania weekend day two of the Prism. But fill us in and answer Rich's question. He doesn't think that the story between the two of you is over yet.
I'd get into that quick and then we'll go over the stuff that happened before. But I'll no longer be doing Attack shows, sadly. There's a few things that have gone on. It's nothing really to do with first off, Attack is brilliant. It's the best place with the best people, the best management. Yeah. Like it's fantastic. It's just a couple of things that have gone on personally where I won't be wrestling for Attack anymore. It's again like a bitter pill to swallow, but that's sadly where that is. I feel like I left at a right time, though. I feel like losing to Lycos was the best way I could have gone out. He was kind of like a coach to me when my first run through with Attack.
Yeah.
So it was kind of nice having my last little one with him there. So we were all aware that was going to be it, but sadly, that's done with Attack for me. But beforehand, as we were talking with Wild Boar and all that, again, I had my favorite match of the year with him, and he's my coach as well, like my actual coach, not just backstage coach me and Estania, they're my actual full coach. So that was a nice moment to have, even though at the end wasn't so nice.
These things happen. A couple of the first time that I saw you in a ring, now I'll hold my hands up, you know, full transparency, I didn't get to many indie shows before lockdown, but after lockdown, that's when my world opened up. But 2021 October, Liverpool, TNT, Extreme Wrestling, and it was Extreme Fields from the Electric Warehouse. That was a really unique show, a mixture of pro wrestling and rock music. And you was in a triple threat match for the Ultra X title, weren't you, against Robbie X and Scotty Rourke and yourself. Do you remember that? Because what I remember specifically about that match was the ceiling and the lights were very low, but there was also a metal girder above one side of the ring. And with you three being crazy bastards with your high flying, every time you went up onto the top rope or anywhere near that steel beam girder, you had to duck your head, which is like all kind of holding our breath. Do you remember that one? Because that one certainly stands out in my memory.
I can remember that one. I can remember Robbie X in that match specifically seemed very angry, right? So as I was wrestling around the ring, I was fucking just thinking, I was like, Robbie mad, Robbie not X, Robbie mad. So like, I was like, I don't know why he's such a spicy boy today, but he was spicy. He's but Robbie's great. It was a good show that when it was my first kind of like, I don't know, like a festival, I guess, indoor wrestling.
I think that was the aim of it, wasn't it? Yeah, to give you that festival vibe.
Yeah, but I was there. So I went up with Elijah and LK Messinger and a couple of others, but they were on early in the day and I wasn't on till late. So I had to leave real early to then sit around all day until things. So I got to watch a lot of wrestling and I've listened to a few bands because I think Junior were playing as well. So that's Mark right. Was up there. It was the first time I was in the ring with Scotty Rourke. But yeah, I remember that being a fan.
Three of the best. And it was a long day. I think we were up there probably 12 hours, but it was a really, really fun day. I want to take you back to Slam Masters now. And I was also present, I think it was last October now, so we're going back over a year. And it was yourself versus Ace Austin in the main event once again at Slam Masters, the brawl from the banking hall, I think it was. And I was there doing backstage interviews. What are your memories of that one? Because I kind of loved the hell out of that match. And with the two of you, it was high-flying, death-defying, all them terms for a crazy, fast-paced match. But the two of you killed it. What are your recollections of Ace Austin in that match?
So I got approached with that match, and I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. Like, it wasn't even a thought. It was like, damn right, I'm doing this one. So jumped into it, and I think that was my first like import since the old TAC days. So I was very much along the lines of, I need to get my name out here more now. This is an opportunity. The guys at Slam Masters were very, very kind in booking that match. And I can remember just going all out, like everything. I was like, well, I've got to try and beat this dude. Everything's got to come out here, everything. And I don't think he expected that, because I still feel like there's still interaction online on Twitter or X with me and him on occasion. And I can even remember being at like a Rev Pro show, and Yota Tsuji came up to me and he was like, I saw your match with Ace Austin. He was like, very much liked it. And I was like, oh, fucking hell. I was like, thank you. So I don't think Ace Austin expected it. I thought he thought this was just going to be we'll get through this type of match. But lovely guy. Really got along well with him. I thought he was a really nice bloke, and the opportunity was great. And I feel like that match got me a lot of eyes on me.
Absolutely. I think there was one move in particular that I think possibly went viral or nearly went viral, and that was a dive through the ropes where you nearly crash landed. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I went over his head. Straight over his head, and I almost scorpioned, but we were all good. I managed to just slide on my belly a little bit, but
you recovered.
I landed on my head nearly, but I got lucky. Yeah, that was one of those lucky moments where it was like, here we go, here we go, here we go. And then everything starts to go really slow. And you're like, I've been in the air for way too long. I can see the ground come in. And it's weird in those moments because you genuinely feel like you can hear and see and feel everything at 0.2 speed, man. It's...
Yeah.
Well, but we were okay. So we...
Yeah. Yeah, and you delivered a stellar match for sure. Another question. Richie, friend of the show, he has been very, very busy. He's asking about your tattoos. Nico, do your tattoos mean anything to you, either past, present, or future? In particular, I know that you've got the five-bar gate with the one next to it, the six. My question is, what does that mean? But Richie's question is, tell us a bit about your tattoos.
So I'll go into the arm tattoo, basically. So we've got like some of it here, but on the side I've got like a mural of words, and it's all to do with my mental health. So it's a personal mental health tattoo. It's very much of a wear your heart on your sleeve type of thing. And if you look on the side, you can kind of see like symbols that go around the mural. And the tattoo itself is, the mural is all about schizophrenia, because I was diagnosed with schizophrenia when I was in the Royal Navy, and that's how I got discharged. So all of these symbols around it are to do with different types of madness, symbols of madness throughout, I guess, the past thousands of years from different cultures. I thought that was a nice little tribute to what schizophrenia kind of is portrayed as. Because I feel like I got the tattoo as a wear your heart on your sleeve type of thing. Because the more that I just accepted it and lived with it, and I was just like, no, this is just a thing. It doesn't matter. Everybody's got something. Everybody's got a crutch. So why does mine matter? So it was more of a, no, this is fine. I'm just going to tell people. I'm just going to carry on with it. And the more open with it I've been, the best it's been. And I've even managed to help quite a few people along the road with mental health and with schizophrenia as things have gone on. So that's what this tattoo is about. And then this one is also a mental health tattoo. But we'll, that one's a bit too deep for this one. So
that's fine. That's fine.
That one.
There we go. Thank you so much for telling us about your tattoos. A very fascinating question. I want to ask you, and I think you have told me backstage what this means, but your nickname, the man with a black heart of gold. Give us the origins of that, how you got it, or maybe who gave it to you. When did that originate?
So this was kind of like a how do I want to wrestle type of thing this was. I was throwing shit against the wall. I was playing around with a void walker for a little bit, and I was like, you know what, it sounds pretty cool, but no, there's something that's not really there. So I was like, I'll just let that fizzle out. And at the time I was using a song called Dark Nights by Dorothy. And I just listened to the song, and it was part of the song is I Need a Man with a Black Heart of Gold. And I was like, hang on, let me just have a think about that for a second. And I was like, if I can wrestle in a way where I am that, I am this guy that's willing to do whatever, but still with a good heart in place. So that's where his Man with a Black Heart of Gold came from. And I ran with it, and it's all been good since then. And now I've got
answered his next question as well.
There you go.
Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. I mean, you've got to say it's incredible to think that you've only been in the business kind of properly for 6 years, or coming up 6 years at the beginning of 2024, according to my maths. What would you say has been some of the proudest moments, or maybe the proudest moment you've had so far? If you've got more than one, that's fine.
Okay, so winning the All Wales is one. Wrestling my coaches is another one. So wrestling Mark Andrews, wrestling Wobbo. Winning the Attack 24 in London. I wrestled Connor Mills in the Angel Hotel in Cardiff for Creation. And that got a lot of eyes. And that opened up my eyes to a certain type of wrestling as well. So I was very proud of that, because a lot of my coaches and a lot of people around me were like, that's you now. That's who you've got to be. That's the wrestler. So I was like, oh, okay. Holding the TNT belt for a full year. I don't want to miss anything. I'm not too big on like appearances at companies, because I feel like that's just a promoter's decision to go, oh, we'll get him in. It's kind of not like big things. I feel like are a, so if I got brought over to Japan or something like that, yeah. Right, okay, this is a big thing ticked off you. But like promotions around the UK, although it's like fantastic wrestle for them, I feel like that's just one guy just sitting behind a keyboard, like me and you, just going, ah, bring him in. So, like.
But it's moments, isn't it? And
it's moments, yeah. Like, I'm definitely missing one or two years. And
you've covered a lot of ground. You've covered a lot of ground.
Like, you piece of shit. How could you forget about this? Wrestling like Goss as well. In that goodbye from Attack match. So,
yeah.
That was another nice one. Oh, and actually as well is training people in New Wave. It's made me think differently about being a wrestler. It's made me act differently. And there's just some other different type of like gratification you get from like people coming out of training sessions that happy. And I love it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Before we ask you for your socials, just a quick reminder to my viewers, listeners, followers at home about my up and coming interviews. Obviously, we're in the month of November, which marks 5 years of Wrestle Majonas. This Thursday, the 23rd, I've got Kira Chimera coming onto the show live, 8 p.m. UK time. You do not want to miss that. She's having a bang or every year, picking up gold left, right, and center. And then next Monday, we've got the Queen of Mean, Lana Austin, another individual that doesn't do many interviews. If you want to see and listen to and get in touch with Lana Austin, you can do live on Wrestling with Jonas next Monday. And don't forget, and I'm going to try and find the graphic very quickly here, part one of my Legends Masterclass interview with Johnny Saint is already out. Part two will be dropping soon, another hot exclusive for Wrestling with Jonas. But Nico, it's been an awesome interview. Awesome having you on as a guest. Episode 333 of Wrestling with Jonas during our 5 year anniversary. First of all, tell us your socials, where we can reach out to you, where we can see some of your stuff, your posts, get in touch, say hi, or just learn more about Nico Angelo.
If you can follow me on Instagram at Nico Angelo UK, and then on Twitter or X at Nico Angelo _BHG. That's Black Heart of Gold. Most of my content comes on Instagram, to be honest. You see like MVs and reels and this, that, and the other. Most of my stuff goes through there. So, yeah.
There we go. Now, I did check your Big Cartel, and you do have some shirts up there, but they all appear to say sold out. Is that right? Is that still the case?
It is, but you can get them in person at whatever shows I'm going to be at.
Pretty sweet designs.
Those two left, you've got the middle one, which is the Don't Send Me No Angel t-shirt, and the Bad Brains Schizophrenia t-shirt.
Nice. But Nico Angelo, it's been awesome having you as a guest. If you've got any parting words, any final words from Nico Angelo to sign us off this episode of Wrestling with Jonas for your fans, your friends, your followers, people that have supported you over the years, anything you'd like to say to sign us off?
Honestly, just thank you to everybody, even the people that were there at the beginning that are still here now. I can see every single one of you, and thank you so much. Honestly, like, those are the people that I really like want to stick around, you know what I mean? Not for just for the flavor of the month, not just because I've had one good match, but the people from there from the start to now, thank you very much. And hold on, because this year is going to get real spicy.
100%. But Nico Angelo, the man with the black heart of gold, thank you so much, my friend.
Oh, thank you, sir.